The longest field goal ever attempted is 76 yards. The longest field goal ever missed? Also 76 yards. Why bring this up? Because knowing your limits matters, both when you're kicking a field goal and when you gamble. Betting more than you're comfortable with is like trying a 70-yard field goal. It probably won't go well. So set a limit when you gamble and stick to it. Want more helpful tips like this? Go to KeepItFunOhio.com for games, quizzes, and lots of ways to keep your gambling from getting out of hand.
Do you want a beautiful lawn? Enter True Green, the easiest way to get a great lawn. Just water and mow and they'll do the rest. Weed control, fertilization, aeration, and more. True Green is the official lawn care treatment provider of the PGA Tour. And they have a verified best price, which guarantees you the lowest price with no compromise on quality. You do you. Let True Green do your lawn care. Visit TrueGreen.com, TrueGreen.com to get the best lawn at the best price with the best people. Guaranteed.
The following program is a PodcastOne.com production.
He's a world champion wrestler, best-selling author, actor, and lead singer of Fozzy. Now he's rocking the podcast world.
Yay!
This is Talk Is Jericho. Talk Is Jericho, starring Chris Jericho.
Welcome to Talk Is Jericho. This is the Pot of Thunder and Rock and Roll. The People's Podcast has arrived. This is the remedy for boredom. Let's go for a ride. Jigga, jigga, ting. Bound, slung on, bound. Squat up, bound, a gong. Slung on, bound. Slung on, gong. Now you're messing with a
son of a bitch.
Messing with a son of a bitch. I'm not really a son of a bitch. That's just the song. Bringing in a new tune to the Cowbell Extravaganza. This is an entertainment regatta. Talk Is Jericho. Happy to have you here with us today. I know there's hundreds of thousands of podcasts that you could check out, but you're here with me. And the funny thing is, as I'm playing Cowbell and reading the intro to you, my flip-flops just broke. How brutal is that when your flip-flops break? Now I got to sit and try and put it back in there. But once they break, they're done. Man, I'm going to have to tape these flip-flops to my feet. That happened to me before. I was in, we were on tour with Fozzy, and I took a ride with Anthrax on Anthrax's bus. We played a show with Anthrax, and then I jumped on the Anthrax bus to hang out. And when we got to Denmark the next day, we were driving from, I think, like Luzern, Switzerland to Copenhagen, the home of Lars Ulrich. It's pretty crazy. I've never been there before. But anyways, I get off the bus and I get a text from our manager, the illustrious Mark Willis, who says, yeah, Fozzy's bus has been in a crash. Everybody's okay, but you're going to miss the gig in Copenhagen tonight. It was actually, sorry, Aarhus, Denver. Aarhus, in the middle of our street. Aarhus, where the Fozzy gig got canceled. And I had to go catch a train to go to Hamburg to meet up with the guys where we were at the day after our house, and they were going to have to meet me there once they kind of got the bus fixed or bus replaced. Now, the couple crazy things. One thing is we were just talking with Anthrax, with Charlie and Frankie and Joey Belladonna about the Metallica bus crash where Cliff Burton passed away. We had just been talking about that at about 4:45 in the morning. I just remember because I happened to look at my phone. And around 4:45 in the morning is when Fozzy had their bus crash. The driver fell asleep at the wheel and popped they went up on a median, like in the middle of the road. There was kind of like a concrete barricade. And they popped up like speed and went rolling down the freeway and crashed. And nobody got hurt, but the whole back of the bus was destroyed. The TV fell off the wall, smashed. The front door came off the side of the bus, was ripped off. The whole front window shield was smashed, and the side door was all ripped apart. And the thing is, in the bunk, right by the side door, there's the driver's bunk. So what happens is when you have a long trip, you have a double driver, it's called. And a normal driver can only drive for like 8 hours, and then another driver has to take over. Those are the rules of like the bus association in Europe. It might be the same here, but in Europe for sure. So the guy drove, and he was a really cool guy. His name was Terry. And then he went and got in his bunk, which is right down kind of a little cubby hole by the side door where the stairs are where you go up, you know? Like the other driver took over. I think it was a girl. And she fell asleep like half an hour in. Dozed off, fell asleep, done. When the door got pulled off, Terry opened his bunk door, which is like a sliding kind of a cupboard, and looked out, and his head was right by the road. Like, had fate not intervened, he would have been crushed, you know, and you know, would have died. So the bus was destroyed, but none of the gear was destroyed, and all the guys were okay. So they're going to Hamburg. Now, I'm on the anthrax bus, and all I brought with me was a toothbrush and flip-flops. Because I just left my stuff on the other bus. But why would I need it, right? Why would I need... I'm just going to see them the next day anyways. So I had to take an 8-hour train ride with just flip-flops and a toothbrush. And my back was really messed up at the time. This is before I started doing DDP yoga. Represent you. This ain't your mama's yoga. Bang! So my back was really hurting. And I got on this train and started riding, you know, 8 hours. And the promoter had given me money for the train ticket. So I'm sitting and it's like, it's just super hot and it's sweaty and it's smelly and people are smoking and it's just, I can't move. I'm uncomfortable. I'm bored. I've got nothing to read. I've got nothing to do. And finally, usually on European trains, about after an hour or 2 hours, the conductor will come down and clip your ticket. And the guy came down and clipped my ticket. And then he goes, you got to change seats. And I'm like, how can I change seats? Like, you know, like, why? Like, this is already the worst seat. Like, the only seat worse than this one is the toilet in the bathroom. It probably smells better in there. And he's like, no, you have a first-class ticket. And I look at this ticket, and it's got a little wee, like, letter E or something on the top right-hand corner. All my European listeners are probably laughing at how dumb I am. But I didn't know. It didn't say first class on it or anything. I'm like, couldn't it at least have said, like, first-class ticket? So I was sitting in the wrong spot, and I got to go up to another area of the train where at least I had a little bit of room. But that was too late. By that point, my back is screaming and I've got nothing to do and I'm hot and sweaty and blah, blah, blah. I finally show up in Hamburg. And as I'm walking through the crowded terminal, a businessman steps on my foot. I was like, and if that doesn't hurt enough, he breaks my flip-flop. So I'm trying to fix the flip-flop like I just was. You're trying to put the strap into the hole. It just pops out. It pops out. And I can't go barefoot. Like, I'm in the middle of downtown Hamburg. And I can't, they don't really have flip-flop stores, you know, in Germany, I guess. So I bought some tape and I taped the flip-flop to my foot so I could at least walk somewhere. And I'm walking up the stairs of the terminal. I go out the front of the terminal and sitting right there is a bum. And the bum looks at me and he's like holding his little cup of change in it, you know, like change or whatever the word is. And I was like, dude, you know, I've got nothing. And I showed him my shoe and he was like, he looked at my shoe and his shoes were like white tennis shoes that were like almost new. And he's like, change. And I show him my shoe and he's like, never mind. And I walked to the hotel with a shoe taped to my foot. Huge rock star here, ladies and gents. And that's what I'm going to have to do today when I leave this studio, unless Nick's got an extra pair of shoes. What size shoes are you? 11. I'm 11 too. Maybe I'll borrow a pair of your shoes. If not, I'm going to have to go straight to Kohl's and buy a new pair of flip-flops. Because I can't do this. I can't do this, man. New Fozzie song on iTunes now. It's called Lights Go Out. And I'm going to play it for you. If you like Lights Go Out or if you don't Lights Go Out, later on, check the Twitter. And you're going to call in and give us your review of Lights Go Out, the new Fozzie tune, taking the world by storm. It was number 3 on the Australian metal charts and got all the way to number 16 on the rock charts, which is really, really cool. And we will be playing Lights Go Out. We played it live for the first time the other day in Jacksonville at Rockville, which was awesome. But May 3rd, we're going to be at Carolina Rebellion. May 5th, we're going to be at the Springfield Empire. We're playing with Raven, new wave of British heavy metal bands, one of my favorite bands when I was growing up. And when I found out we had the Empire gig in Springfield, Virginia, kind of the Washington, D.C. area, I called John Gallagher from Raven. I said, dude, I want you to come play with us. I'd love to play on a show with Raven on the bill. So Raven is coming down to support us. We're excited. If you like the new wave of British heavy metal, and if you like Fozzie and you're in Washington, D.C., come check us out. May 6th in Pittsburgh at the Altar Bar with Buck Cherry. That should be fun. May 7th, Chameleon Club in Lancaster, Pennsylvania, with Gemini Syndrome and Eyes Set to Kill. May 8th, Thursday, Main Street Armory in Rochester, New York. That's Buck Cherry and Adelita's Way. May 9th at The Chance in Poughkeepsie, New York. We're going to be there with Josta King playing downstairs. And then May 10th in Hampton Beach Casino in Hampton, New Hampshire. It's with Buck Cherry. So if you want to come rock with us and you're in that area, it's going to be amazing. The new songs sound killer. And then June 12th and the 15th at Leicester Square in London, it's London is Jericho, which is my live Q&A spoken word show. I'm excited about that. And right sandwiched in the middle, like a nice little tasty gubbin, June 14th, Fozzy's at Download on the main stage. So come and do that. I've been doing some shilling, but as a reward, I'm going to now play the new Fozzy song, Lights Go Out. Crank it! If you like it, go to iTunes and buy it and tell all your friends and tell everybody on Talk is Jericho. You're going to get the number on the Twitter very, very soon on the Twitter at Fozzy Rock at Talk is Jericho. Call in and tell us what you think of Lights Go Out. And we got Sebastian Bach coming up to talk about his new record, Give Him Hell. But before we get started, have you checked out the Keep Our Podcasts Free banner at podcastone.com? It's a big assistance if you could go check it out and give it a look. You'll find all my sexy beast sponsors there, and they're all very sexy, very animal, animalistic. You can give them a little bit of love because they're the reason I get to do this for you for free twice a week. That's why we're able to make it happen. You'll find the Amazon links there as well. That's the easiest way to support the show. And now we have links for Amazon UK and Amazon Canada, as well as Amazon USA. Everybody's going Amazon, Amazon USA. So again, please go to podcast1.com. Click on the Keep Our Podcast Free banner at the top of the page and click on Talk is Jericho to find out about the sponsors who are sponsorific. All right, I've got Sebastian Bach coming up, but first.
The longest field goal ever attempted is 76 yards. The longest field goal ever missed, also 76 yards. Why bring this up? Because knowing your limits matters, both when you're kicking a field goal and when you gamble. Betting more than you're comfortable with is like trying a 70-yard field goal. It probably won't go well. So set a limit when you gamble and stick to it. Want more helpful tips like this? Go to KeepItFunOhio.com for games, quizzes, and lots of ways to keep your gambling from getting out of hand.
Talk is Jericho.
Sitting across from me right now on the eve of the release of his new record,
cool.
I got the dastardly Sebastian Bach is here.
I just had a birthday 3 weeks ago.
You did?
Yeah, April 3rd.
You just remember? Oh, really? 3 weeks ago. All right.
See how good I am?
That's good. So
right?
You're on the spot, man.
Yes.
So let me ask you a question. So you got lost on the way over here.
I did.
Where were you?
In a house.
Somebody's house?
This is where I was.
And you took a picture
and
of
I
it.
Texted it to my manager and I said, this can't be right. What?
Oh, that's great. And of course, that would have been great if you would have knocked on the door.
I was getting out because I did Jay Moore's podcast,
uh-huh.
which is in his house.
Oh, okay.
So I was like, is this what podcasts are?
Yeah.
You go to somebody's house?
And just hang out
and
at
I got
the
house? Is this a house?
I just loved it. It's like, dude, are you in a house? I'm like, where the hell are you, man?
I was north of Santa Monica with all the boys.
But you lived in L.A. for a long time now.
Yeah. Like yeah. 2 to 3 years.
And this is after the freaking hurricane like destroyed your house, right?
Yeah. Isn't it great? It's like I moved to New Jersey 1987.
Mm-hmm.
You know the whole story. F***ing hit it big with Skid Row. We all buy mansions. Then band breaks up.
Mm-hmm.
All of those guys move out of Jersey. I'm the only one left mm-hmm. in the mansion, the big mansion.
Right.
By the grace, getting kicked out of the band, 96, I'm like, what the f*** do I do now? I was like, what?
Mm-hmm.
You know, you were one of my very first solo shows ever up in...
That's right, up in Red Deer.
Like, I didn't know I could do that. I didn't know I could be solo.
Yeah.
I didn't know. Luckily, well, I didn't have a choice, but...
Mm-hmm.
So, by the grace of God... You know, I have this voice. I did 4 Broadway shows.
Mm-hmm.
I did television. Somehow I managed to be the only guy in Skid Row that kept his mansion. Easy. No problem.
Right.
Busy guy, Sebastian Bach. I'm sitting there going, this is amazing. I've mm-hmm. had a great, great career. F***ing rock and roll.
Right. Rock and roll star.
Yeah.
Big mansion.
Everything's great. Boom. Hurricane. What? I'm like, really? After all that, after everything.
Right. After all you've been through.
Everything I've done, a hurricane.
And it, like, it.
I can't sing so good to defeat a hurricane. That's. I'm sorry.
And it trashed your whole house, right?
It's still condemned. It's still condemned.
It's condemned.
Yeah, I got a notice. Come and clean up your property. I f***ing called the guy, or you're going to get fined. I go, well, how the f***? Do you want me to come on the property when it's condemned? And the cops told me not to go on the property.
He's like, well, who told you that?
I don't know. What the f***? You gonna fine me? How the f*** am I supposed to clean up the property if I can't go on the property, Einstein?
So
he's
you,
like, oh, this is you. Yeah.
And you had lost like all
and
your...
I go to the guy, oh, so you're the f***ing guy whose job it is to go find people who have lost their homes. Yeah, and I go, you're going to have a tough time collecting that fine, brother. Okay, knock yourself out.
And you had all your, like, memorabilia and all
in
your...
the basement.
Kiss
yeah.
collection and everything.
Yeah.
I remember you had a picture of, like, you had Kiss Alive, made it.
Yeah.
The autographed Kiss Alive.
Wow.
That's a drag, man.
It is. It's overwhelming. One thing I want to do is go, if I can, you know... get past the police tape and everything. I'd like to do MTV Condemned Cribs. And because it was on MTV Cribs. I want to do the exact same spot, same camera angle.
That would be great.
In a condemned, destroyed home.
Right.
That is what I'm going to do.
Even if you just do it and put it up
on YouTube.
It's
going to be the craziest... Right on! Just craziness.
Well, man, I mean, like you said, you've been through a lot of stuff, and you moved out to L.A. Now you're getting ready to release Give 'Em Hell, the new record.
Love seeing
that. Which is your fourth studio record, I believe?
Bring 'Em Back Alive, yeah. Angel Down, Kicking and Screaming, Apocalypse Now,
okay.
And this, and also Forever Wild DVD.
The thing that I was going to ask you about that was interesting to me is that when you left Skid Row or got kicked out or whatever, like you said, I thought you were going to go right away and start recording records. But it took you a while to – like Angel Down was like the first all-original Sebastian Bach solo record in 2005, which was about 10 years after the Skid Row thing went down. Did you just have so many other – Well, Skid Row was 96, wasn't it?
Yeah, okay.
96?
That's just basically a question of songs.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Me.
What was that? Me.
I don't know.
It's like a half burp.
I don't know why that was.
Half
I don't know.
Warm up. That was good.
I don't know what's going on.
We got it all on tape. Okay, it's perfect.
Thank you.
So a matter of songs, a matter of being able to write guys?
My recording process is like miserable. Bob Marlatt calls me Mr. Poopy Pants. That's his name for me. Oh, here he comes, Mr. Poopy Pants. And I'm convinced of the worst case scenario. Like, this is going to suck. And
right.
Then after months of working, like I listen to these demo. What I do is I collect music from my friends.
Mm-hmm.
Put it in my iPod. I make a playlist.
Mm-hmm.
Then I go on runs, and I try to run every day that I have time to do it. It's like a couple-hour thing. And I put it on repeat, and then I just – I'm talking every day for like over a year.
You're talking about the riffs that your friends have given you?
Yes.
Song parts,
yes.
Yeah.
And then the more I listen to it, the more I hear shit.
Mm-hmm.
And some of it comes very easily. Some of it takes a long, long time.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm really good at knowing what is good. That's even Snake said that, who hates me. He said the one thing about Sebastian is that he knows a good song when he hears it. He said that about me, and for him to say anything nice about me is astonishing.
Mm-hmm.
But I do know. There's a method to my madness, and the whole Mr. Poopy Pants thing changes when I start to hear what I need to fucking hear come out of the speakers. Then I'm like the Hulk, and I become the happiest, most excitable guy, jumping around, playing air guitar, and flinging my limbs around the studio. Bob Marlette's laughing his guts out. He's laughing so hard, he's crying. I'm like, what's so funny? He goes, you f***ing amuse me, dude. And I'm like, I don't know. I'm not trying to do anything. I do know when it rocks.
Mm-hmm.
I know it. Like, I can feel it. And when I get that crazy Sebastian feeling, and I want to grab you and say, listen to this. I know it's f***ing good. Like I don't bullshit myself. That's probably the biggest reason that I'm no longer in my old band, because
you keep alluding to that. Why is that then? Why are you not in your old band? I mean,
well, you'd have to ask them that. But my process that I just explained.
Mm-hmm.
If somebody brings me a song that they like and they think will be good, but I don't feel it in my heart.
Mm-hmm.
I have no choice but to destroy their feelings. There's no choice. I can't fake it. I can't fake it. I just can't.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember when I joined Skid Row, and I try to be a good guy and on the team and, you know, one for all and all for one. I remember one song we were working on that I thought sucked ass, right? There's nothing personal against anybody. I'm just...
The song doesn't work.
I don't know why. Like, right. I don't know why or why not. When they played me 18 Life, I go, that's done. That's a keeper. No discussion.
Right.
Good song.
Yeah.
Ricky, okay, we're good. Next.
Next song. Next song.
I mean, am I wrong?
Like, yeah.
That's a good tune.
Right.
Nothing.
You knew it right away. So
yeah.
What was the song?
But I remember specifically going, okay, we're going to, Michael Wagner was there too. And I was like, all right, let's go for it.
The producer.
And I walk up to sing it, right? And here's what happens.
Now, what song was it?
Like, my mouth just shuts, and I stand there like a shy little boy.
You?
And everybody's mad.
You've never been shy in your life.
You're a f***ing I'm like, I don't know what to tell you. I'm sorry.
What song was it?
I don't know.
Oh, okay. Can't stand the heartache, maybe.
Yeah. What are you going to do?
And it's hard, too, because you come from Canada into a group of guys that have been playing together for a while from another country, from Jersey.
Yes.
And, you, of course, like you said, you have to try and be the nice guy and fit in
with
the gang that's already established.
Yes. And I try to do the thing. When it's all good, it's youth gone wild. When we're all – this is the result of my poop. That's the result of it. But it's not every band's the same. I don't know why they don't know that. I don't know why they don't realize. Like, I don't get that. You know.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it's a five-way marriage.
You don't have to be best friends either. You know, I know that Motley Crue is not having dinner together before the gig, all four of them. Hey, how are you? Great, man. Those guys don't hang out.
Right.
Maybe I'm wrong, but...
Well, I mean, you're right, though. I mean, look at the Police when they reunited. Take two separate buses if you have to and get on stage. Yeah.
What's the big deal?
I mean, you kind of have a responsibility to the fans to keep those songs going with you guys together, even if you don't like each other, like you said. But,
What are you going to do?
It is what it is. But my point was, though, it took you a while to get that vibe where you started doing, like, Angel Down was the first, like, Here Comes Sebastian, 100%.
I just heard the songs, like, I just...
That was it.
Yeah.
Well, in between that, though, you did the Broadway thing with Jekyll. I mean, that was amazing. I came and saw you. It was a great night.
We got kicked out of a restaurant.
Dude,
I had a letter. Great. Dear Sebastian, you are most welcome in our restaurant anytime, but please keep your friend Chris Jericho away from the premises.
Well, we went out after your show. It was actually, here's the lineup. You, me, Adrian Smith from Iron Maiden, Paul Gargano from Metal Edge, and baseball player Scott, the baseball player, who was a real jerk.
Wow.
So we went out and we got loaded in that bar that you used to go to after your shows, like the local bar, and we got really, I mean, we were
loud and
spitting beer on each other and just spraying condiments on each other, and you were crying at one point, and you came over and kissed me on the lips at one point.
Did I really?
Yeah, and then me and Gargano got in a fight on the ground.
What? I couldn't believe that they wrote a form letter.
A form letter.
That was in my dressing room the next day.
Dear Sebastian, keep your friends out of here.
It was on, like, stationery.
You actually had to perform the next day?
Yeah.
Dude, that was a crazy night. I had to perform, too. I had to perform at the Garden, and my wife took your son with her to the show because you said, can you take my son to the show? And so my wife was kind of like babysitting. I think it was probably Paris at the time. Yeah. But I mean, how was that whole experience of the Broadway? I mean, you were a natural, dude, as an actor and as a singer. It was
Thank
a great
you.
Part for you.
That's all the same, too. It's about the part.
Mm-hmm.
It's about the part.
Mm-hmm.
People are like, he's amazing as Jekyll and Hyde. What a talented actor. I wasn't f***ing acting at all. Like, Jesus Christ was hard.
You did Jesus Christ Superstar.
Yes.
Jesus.
Yes.
Yeah.
That's not an easy role. That's not an easy...
To play the savior of mankind?
To have a director saying, Sebastian, you are Jesus. I go, show me a dude who's walking around believing he's Jesus. And that's not me, dude. Okay, you got the wrong Jesus. Okay?
Right.
It was too weird. Like, it was fun for the first bit, but when you do something 8 times a week for 6 months, I never missed any performances.
Mm-hmm. And that's hard on your voice too.
It is, but I have a weird voice. I have a strange voice. Knock on wood.
In that you got a lot of power.
No, the more I use it, the better it works.
Mm-hmm.
Nobody can understand it.
Because you don't get a day off on Broadway, or do you get one day off?
Where my voice is happy is this high tenor range that I can project very well. If I would have a day off, my super lows are not loud.
Mm-hmm.
Like if I have a day off, if I sing every day, my voice is better. But it's all about singing correctly.
Mm-hmm.
If I sing wrong,
if I over yell or over, if the band's too loud and I'm shouting over the drums, that's mm-hmm. bad. That's really mm-hmm. bad. A lot of people don't understand that there's more to do with hearing the fucking music than singing the music.
Mm-hmm.
It's not hard for me to sing. It's usually really fucking hard for me to hear what fucking song it is.
Mm-hmm.
I'm exaggerating.
No, I get you.
But
though.
You play.
I mean, that's...
sometimes on a smaller stage when it's too loud, I can't.
But
fucking hear it.
And
it's
that's why
too much.
That's why inner ears are the best thing ever.
Yes,
I mean,
yes.
Before you'd have to pick the sweet spot on stage, yeah. And like, okay, I'm standing on the left over here, and I can't move.
I never
but
knew
I can
that
hear things.
When I was a kid. I never knew. That singing wasn't really the hard, hearing it was hard.
Yes.
Because it's, for me, if I'm standing right next to the drums, mm-hmm. it makes it ridiculous.
Yeah, you can't hear anything.
Because the drums go through the mic.
Yeah.
And then you're just like, it's just so loud, it's crazy. That's why I enjoyed Broadway.
Was it different singing for
yeah,
you?
Because I didn't have to fucking yell and shout.
Mm-hmm.
When I yell and shout, I don't sound like Sebastian. When mm-hmm. I'm singing in the studio... it's real singing, and it's not yelling. Like it's speech level singing, and mm-hmm. I save my power for the high screams. Mm-hmm. I know you have the same mm-hmm. kind of style, mm-hmm. but it's the Broadway stage is great because it's about the voice,
mm-hmm.
you know.
How did you get involved in that?
Jason Flom,
yeah,
from Atlantic Records,
A&R guy for Atlantic,
who signed Skid Row. He called me and he goes, "This is a weird call." Mm-hmm. He goes. I'm wondering if you'd be interested in this. I'm like, do you have the right phone number? What? He goes, dude, you can do it. I go, what?
Mm-hmm.
And it was all about, he goes, you sing your nice way for mm-hmm. Dr. Jekyll, and you sing your mean way for Mr. Hyde.
Yeah.
And that is exactly what I did.
There was one number I remember where you
Confrontation.
Actually, you know what I'm talking about.
I have it on DVD, and I got to release it someday.
I was wishing
it's
that
me,
there was a soundtrack for that.
It's me at the top... toppermost of the poppermost.
It's funny that you knew exactly what song it was. And in Confrontation, Sebastian went from Dr. Jekyll to mm-hmm. Mr. Hyde within the course of the song.
Yes.
I remember that. Mm-hmm. And just like if the hair came out and just...
I was so into it that twice... right at the last scene, I don't know if you remember this, Dr. Jekyll gets married at mm-hmm. the end of the play. And then during the vows, he transforms into Mr. Hyde. And the play... calls for when he does it to like throw himself down on the stage and hit the fucking stage, right?
Mm-hmm.
One time, because I'm huge, you know, I'm 6'4",
yeah,
I'm gigantic,
right?
So one time there was these two old ladies in the front row,
mm-hmm.
and I just did the thing, but I did it extra fucking hard for some reason. You know how some, you know,
yeah,
I go, boom, with all of my, these two ladies took flight. They leapt out of their chairs and were like over the chairs. Then one time I made this little kid bawl his eyes.
Oh, really?
Out. He was so terrified, and I was like Satan right in his face, and I had to shake his hand and I was like, sorry, dude, it's just it's a play, it's okay.
Yeah.
And he's like,
so you are carving out a career for yourself. You did Jekyll and Hyde, then you did Jesus Christ Superstar playing Jesus,
yes,
and then you did
Rocky Horror
Picture Show,
mm-hmm.
and then what led you to not do that?
I'm still I have been in talks this. Very recently for more, I'm very close to doing it again.
Mm-hmm. I think you should. I mean,
I definitely will. It's that's something I can do when I'm 75
mm-hmm,
years old.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
I can go play some role, you
yeah.
know, and be the old dude. It's kind of cool.
Yeah.
You know?
I remember, yeah, it's like you said, it's easier singing for you on your voice. I remember, and some other guys have done it. Paul Stanley did it for Phantom of the Opera, which
yeah.
is cool. But, I mean, you had it, like, the acting part down and everything, too. But
thanks, man.
You know, so we're talking about Give Him Hell, Sebastian's new record.
Yes, sir.
How did you put together the lineup to play on this? Because I know that you had a different lineup for Kicking and Screaming.
Yeah.
Got rid of some of those guys.
Yeah, I didn't get rid of them. It was a crazy gig that... Anyways,
it's hard to be the boss, isn't it?
Well, you have this dream of rocking.
Mm-hmm.
Very few people understand the business side of it. Very,
mm-hmm.
It's hard work. I am astonished at the amount of musicians that I have hired to play in my band that are very talented musicians
mm-hmm.
that cannot get to the airplane on time to make a flight. It flips me out. I don't know what to say. Mm-hmm. I'm like, how can you practice your instrument your whole life and not be capable of getting to an airport on time?
The number one, yeah.
Once is fine. If you deal with a guy where it happens four, five f-ing times, goodbye. Like, mm-hmm. bye. Like, I'm not dealing with this. Mm-hmm.
It's too hard as it is to keep a rock band working and on the road.
Have you experienced what I'm talking about?
We have experienced it. And,
and you, yeah. We didn't invent airplanes. Like, yeah, this is just what we do.
I know. It's like you said, it's hard to have a band of five guys because you're always going to get one guy who's late. This guy loses his passport all the time.
Oh, my God.
You know, this guy's farting on the bus.
It's astonishing.
It's very, very hard to do that. And like I said, now you are the boss, dude. It's your name on the marquee, and you have a responsibility to put together a band that can do all these things that you need them to do.
I know how to do it, but it's amazing to me that you could focus mm-hmm. and becoming great, and you are great, but then you can't get to the f***ing lobby. Like, I don't get that. I'm like, get to the f***ing lobby, and that means I could be a rock star? I'll get to the f***ing lobby.
Yeah.
Like,
that's the last thing
you don't have
about.
To worry about me.
Yeah. No, absolutely. So who played on Give 'Em Hell then?
Because John Five is on the first single, Temptation. Duff McKagan is on bass on the first half of the record. Mm-hmm. He also plays guitar on the song Harmony and bass.
He's a great dude, man.
Oh, my God. He helped me with this record more than anybody.
In what way?
Well, I'll tell you. I shouldn't say this publicly, but I don't read contracts that I sign. I just don't. I assume that the contract says, "Dear Sebastian Bach, you are Sebastian Bach. We are the record company. You be you, we'll be us. Sign here."
Yeah.
I don't. What else should it say? I'm not going to do anything different.
Mm-hmm.
So, I signed this contract with Frontiers Records about 6 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
They hold me to these deadlines that are in this contract, and it's
from 6 years ago.
Yeah, they're like, "You owe us a new record next month." I go, "What in the blazes are you talking about?" When I gave them Apocalypse Now, they advanced me the recording budget for the next record, like the next week. Hmm. I go, "What are you doing?" They go, "Where's the new record?" I go, "I just gave it to you." They go, "No, the next one." I go, "What?"
Yeah.
Well, and I love it. I am saying right now, thank you. Thank you. Mm-hmm. Thank you. Because when I go to Best Buy, there is maybe 100 CDs to choose from.
Yeah.
Like, there is two aisles of mm-hmm. CDs. I'm in there. I don't know how the f*** I did that. I don't know why I'm one of the last guys to make CDs.
Yeah.
Every time I go on Blabbermouth, "No more CDs from us. The CD is over. The album format is over. It's archaic. It's a dinosaur. Here comes my EP. We're going to release a single." Yeah. I'm the only guy saying, "Here's my new CD." Well, next, I'm coming out with a typewriter.
Yeah. The new CD, Give 'Em Hell. Sebastian Bach here in the studio.
Ooh, my brand new compact disc.
We're going to check in with our sexy sponsors. We'll be right back with more Talking Jericho right after this.
The longest field goal ever attempted is 76 yards. The longest field goal ever missed? Also 76 yards. Why bring this up? Because knowing your limits matters, both when you're kicking a field goal and when you gamble. Betting more than you're comfortable with is like trying a 70-yard field goal. It probably won't go well. So set a limit when you gamble and stick to it. Want more helpful tips like this? Go to KeepItFunOhio.com for games, quizzes, and lots of ways to keep your gambling from getting out of hand.
Talk is Jericho.
We got Sebastian here. Always fun to talk to Sebastian. Always crazy. You mentioned that you played with Duff McKagan on this record. He helped you out.
Yes.
You toured with Guns N' Roses back in 91, 92, 93, yep. Around that time. How was it touring with the biggest band in the world at the time and also one of the craziest?
It's funny you should ask me that, Chris.
Well, I'm glad I did, Sebastian.
Because I'm writing a book.
Mm.
And I know
I know that
you have two, right?
I've just finished my third, and you're in it as well.
Oh, nice.
I think you're one of the only guys that's been in all three of my books.
I read your first book.
Oh, cool.
It was great.
Thank you, man.
Loved it. So I'm working on mine now. Mm-hmm. HarperCollins.
Good. Big company.
Big company. I am. When you asked me what was it like to tour Guns N' Roses,
mm-hmm.
I am going through my brain trying to figure out what kind of book this is going to be. Because
mm-hmm.
I can make it so crazy.
Yeah, it can be the dirt.
Mm-hmm. Easy. I got the same stories as that. Mm-hmm. I never f***ed a burrito, but I did some other stuff. They got me there.
Nice.
Mm-hmm. When I read a book that is like about nothing but drinking and drugs,
mm-hmm.
by page 40, it becomes sad to me
mm-hmm.
as a reader.
Mm-hmm.
I'm like, I get it. I got it. I understand. Mm-hmm. You party, dude. Woo. I got it. I understand. A bum on the street could write that book.
Mm-hmm.
I woke up today. I got drunk. Then I passed out. Then I got drunk. Then I passed. Any bum in the alleyway can write the same story. Mm-hmm. So what the fuck is that? Like, I get it. But after page 90, it's in a boring book.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Well, it's like anything else. If all you're going to do is scream a whole record, right. It gets boring after yeah. a while. You have to sprinkle it in there at the
yeah.
right parts.
But what really hits me is a positive book. That mm-hmm. When I read a book that is like well written, number one,
mm-hmm.
And inspires me to be like a better guy or I don't know, a more positive person.
Mm-hmm.
These are the books that I love. I don't like books that rip apart other people. Like I read Sammy Hagar's book. I couldn't believe that he would put that out, because Neil Peart, who writes tons and tons of books.
Great books.
Yeah, he did an interview that always stuck with me. And they said, Neil, what do you think about when you're writing a book? He goes, well, number one, I can't disparage anybody or throw them under the bus or mm-hmm. anything in a book, because that's forever and mm-hmm. that's just not an option. And mm-hmm. I go, what a cool thing to say
yeah.
right off the bat, boom.
Right.
And he writes 800-page books. Mm-hmm. That are not about this guy did this to me and I'm,
yeah.
I can't stand that.
The thing I learned early on is two things. One, a book is not a place to settle a vendetta or start one. And two, you won. I mean, you're Sebastian Bach. I'm Chris Jericho. We followed our dreams and achieved it. So why do you need to bury anybody? Even if there's people you didn't like, who cares
yes,
about them?
Exactly.
You know, and that's, I think that's a very smart move for you.
I just want
to
be proud of my book.
Yeah.
And if it's nothing about whining, if it's just whining and poor me.
That's not good.
That's a boring book. So that, many books are like that.
Did you read
that.
The Peter Criss
yeah,
book?
Yeah, it just, I was like, please.
Yeah, dude, you're Peter Criss. Come on, man.
The one sentence that astonished me, he goes, the Dynasty Tour, this is the tour where all of the success suddenly started to become depressing. I go, let me analyze that statement. Let's analyze that statement. All of the success was depressing. Wow.
Yeah,
that's f***ing depressing.
Poor guy.
Damn.
Yeah.
And if I read one more thing about how they didn't like all the little kids in the Dynasty Tour, guess who was one of those kids?
You.
Me. Yeah. I loved it. Sorry.
Yeah.
Sorry.
Yeah.
I really dug it.
Well, like,
stupid old me.
Like you said, man, you have to keep that in mind because this book lasts forever.
Yes.
Now, we were talking about touring with Guns N' Roses. You also did a lot of touring with Axl post, you know, Guns N' Roses split, which started when we were in Eddie Trunk's studio.
Yeah.
That night.
You were there.
It was
that
great.
Was insane.
We were talking amongst each other. It was right when you guys had done the rock star rock supergroup.
That was the first time I saw him.
Supergroup. And he called you on the phone. He texted you on the phone.
He had been texted me, and I was telling you guys how crazy it was.
Because
I hadn't heard from him in 13 years.
Yeah. And
then he goes, what are you doing? And I go, I'm on the radio with Eddie Trunk and Chris Jericho. He goes, where? Down the street. He goes, I'll be there in a minute. I go, are you kidding? Remember how late it was?
Yeah. And remember, he showed up with the
Betta.
and then met his son or whatever, yep. and talked to us for hours about rock and roll. And it was the first time you'd seen him. I'd never met him. But, of course, when you first see somebody like that, it's like, I remember we were like, oh, my God, dude, this is the biggest rock star. You're like, he's the Howard Hughes of rock and roll, dude. And he was he was so nice and so cool. But then you ended up rekindling your relationship,
yes.
and you were his opening band for years, it seemed.
Yes.
I mean, that must have been kind of a cool little tip.
It is
for
great.
You.
It's amazing. I have to say, the best tour that I ever did in my life was the 2010 South American tour with Guns N' Roses, Axl. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Because, you know, when your album's number one on the chart in 89, you expect everything to be amazing and over the top. Like, that's the yeah. way it is. But then 20 years later, in a solo band, and it was the same f***ing level of hysteria, and the whole town comes out, the whole city, like 30,000-40,000,
and it's
wow, it's like, oh my God, it's like, it's the best feeling. It's,
and it's crazy in South America. It's yeah, almost like Beatlemania all the time, right?
You can't walk around or anything.
You just mentioned something interesting too. You said, you know, number one album in 89, like you were 19, 20 years old at that time.
Yeah,
your first record, basically your first official record, comes out, and yeah. close to number one, Slave of the Grind was number one. How did you react to that? Was it too much too soon? Like, your very first record is this humongous hit, or had you been doing it long enough that you took it in stride?
Number one, it was a long time ago.
Yeah.
Number two, it's just like a flash. It's like so, it's so exciting.
Mm-hmm.
Like it's tough to put into a couple words.
Yeah,
I don't know what to say. It's.
Well, let me ask you this then. You had been working for years. I mean, I know you were in, you know, Kid Wicked.
Yeah, I was in Bar Bands.
Madam X.
Yeah.
You know, uh-huh. yeah. I love the story that you told. Tell me the story where they, Madam X, or they called you and told you that they had the tour. That was the big tour.
Wait, what?
You told me, you read this, I read the story you told to me. You were like, yeah, I was in Madam X.
Yeah.
And the boss guy, the bass player, called me up and said, dude, this is like an 87 or something. And he was like, we've got the tour. And you're like, who? Like Motley Crue or Rat? Who is he? He goes, no, Foghat.
Yeah. Woo. I don't think we ended up doing that.
No, I think you quit after that.
Yeah.
So when did you know when you joined Skid Row that something special was going on?
No, not at all. Because there were a lot of bands like Babylon AD and Britney Fox. There was a thousand bands.
Mm-hmm.
The last thing that we thought would happen would be, you know, platinum records. We hoped that would happen, but I remember very specifically, after we recorded the record, me and Scotty Hill were walking around Great Adventure Amusement Park, and it was all done, and I remember saying to him, dude, can you f***ing imagine, like, if we f***ing got a gold record, like, can you imagine? He goes, well, man, you know, that would be insane if somebody liked this.
Mm.
And this album has now sold over 10 million worldwide.
It's amazing.
I have a plaque. Over 6 million in the USA alone for that album. And that's like one of the top selling records in Atlantic Records history. It's in the top 10. It's AC/DC, Led Zeppelin. Mm. Skid Row is like number 8.
With three legitimate classic tunes that still, like, everybody knows to this day. Now, how was it when you first, I remember I saw you in Winnipeg, Manitoba, Canada, represent you, opening for Aerosmith, you opened for Bon Jovi. I mean, you guys had all the tours on
Guns
that record.
Roses,
Guns N' Roses.
After that.
I mean, I know how much of a fan you are. I mean, dude, you wear it on your sleeve every day. How cool was that for you to go on stage with some of these guys that you had emulated?
One really cool jam we had was when Aerosmith played with Metallica at the CNE in Toronto, and I wasn't on tour. I was there as a guest, but it was right when we were like our most popular, and Tommy Lee was there for some f-ing reason, and we drove there together. Me and Tommy just drinking beer, smoking pot. Get there, Aerosmith sees me walking around backstage. Steven and Joe bring me in their warm up room, vocal, and they want me to warm up with them just for fun. And I remember la 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 with Steve. I go, this is nuts. Then Steven and Joe asked me to come sing Last Child with them. Metallica opened the show. Black Crowes opened for Metallica. Highlight was me coming out with and doing, I'm on the last child. And it was in Toronto, my hometown. Everybody was there, and it was CNE Stadium, like 75. It was huge. And the reason I'm bringing this up, it was one of the high points of my career. Mm-hmm. Ian Asbury from The Cult, we all went out afterwards with Tom. It was just great. Tommy mm-hmm. was still partying a little bit, or whatever. Mm-hmm. So, but Lars filmed it and has never f***ing given me the footage. And he torments me with that. Every time he sees, like, yeah, dude, I'll send it to you. I got it.
I'll send you the film whenever I can.
I've got the last child in Toronto, Ontario, Canada. I'll send it. I'll get it over to you right now.
Sounds like a high-pitched Gene Simmons.
That's not a good... That was
Gene Simmons.
Mixing metaphors. He owes me that tape, Lars. Damn it.
And you guys, when Slavery Ryan came out, huge, huge record. Number one.
Yes.
In the last year that metal ruled the world, because it was Skid Row, it was Guns N' Roses, it was Metallica, and Van Halen getting number one.
Uh-huh.
Then you went out with Pantera. I mean, that was a groundbreaking tour.
Mm-hmm.
How was that for you guys? Because they were crushing at that point in time.
Yeah, I read this book, Reinventing the Metal, and it doesn't even mention the Skid Row tour in it. It's a Pantera thing.
That was their big break.
And I wrote a review online. I go, this should be called Reinventing What can happen. Reinventing
the history.
No, they also toured with White Zombies.
Just like a little footnote. Here's the fact. They were not big. Me and Scotty Hill were at his house. He played me this song. He goes, there's this new album, Cowboys from Hell. You got to hear this.
Mm-hmm.
And he put it on and we both looked at each other. No. That song. And we looked at each other going, holy shit. We had never heard anything quite like that. That was a new sound. It's like Slayer meets ZZ Top.
Yeah, that's a great...
With a little Van Halen and...
Yeah, a little Kiss.
Judas Priest. Or that's the way it was. So I said to Scotty, we got to bring these guys on tour. And he goes, yeah, that'd be killer. And then they released Vulgar Display of Power 2 months into our tour.
Mm-hmm.
Like, we had been on the road for 2 months, then they released it. And it debuted in the top 40, you know.
Yeah.
So in the same way that Bon Jovi helped Skid Row, we helped Pantera.
Yeah.
Pantera never forgot that. Vinny treats me great. I opened for them in my solo band in like 97 or 98, Reinventing the Steel, like 2 or 3 weeks of touring.
Oh, wow. Okay.
And just because they're nice.
Yeah.
Vinny came and saw my solo band in Pittsburgh, got loaded, jumped on the stage. And he goes, we're going to bring this motherfucker on tour with us. And I thought he was joking.
Like, everybody says that. Hey, we should tour together, dude. Yeah.
I thought it was, sure.
Yeah.
So then I got home and he faxed me the whole tour dates. And I was like, oh my God, that is cool.
Yeah. Because you did give them the big break. Because I remember nobody had really heard of Pantera.
Right? Yeah.
And they were so heavy, but you guys were heavy too. That's one thing I always said about Skid Row is you came out in 89, which was kind of like the hair metal, vibe was going on. And your first record had a couple of those songs.
Mm-hmm.
But when Slave came out, that was a heavy, heavy record.
Yeah.
Like Mud Kicker and, Riot Act. I mean, you guys were just as heavy in some ways as Pantera were.
Well, different vocal style. But actually not really.
Phil could sing at that point. Yeah.
Imagine if he could still hit those.
Oh, I know.
That would be great.
He was such a good singer back then. But then too much barking kind of blew out of the water. But, how was it hanging out with Dime? Did you get along with him
with him incredibly.
Mm-hmm.
We actually did get a chance to record together. We did a Believer for a Randy Rhoads tribute.
Mm.
And it's huge on the internet. Everybody plays.
I have that.
Yeah. And it's me and Dime, so that's a cool thing to have. He stayed at my house. There's stories that are very sad. Like, I don't know if, my personal... most vivid memory of Dimebag, we did this benefit for High Times magazine, Rock for Pot, in 1996 at the Limelight, was it? In New York.
In New York,
and it was me, Rex Brown, Dimebag Darrell, Bam Bam on drums, rest in peace. And so Dimebag stayed at my house for like 4 days in the spare bedroom. Mm-hmm. So he lived in my house with my son Paris. And my most specific memory that I'll never forget was my ex-wife had cooked French toast and bacon, and I was sleeping, and I woke up to the smell of smell of French toast and bacon. The syrup glistened, and I think of poopy pants.
That's going online as soon as it airs. Someone's going to make a remix of that.
Poopy pants. So I woke up and I went, that smells good. I went downstairs in the kitchen. I go, Dimebag wasn't down there. I go, Dimebag, come on, breakfast. And he goes, hold up, Burke. Because they all called me Burke. That's my real last name. They go, we can't call you Sebastian Bach. That's too crazy. You're Burke. I go, fine. So I went upstairs. Look, I go, where's Dimebag? And I looked in my son's room. My son was about five or something, little boy. Mm-hmm. Dimebag was sitting in a Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles foam chair on the floor with his guitar, teaching my son how to play the guitar.
Oh, that's cool.
And I go, dude, breakfast. He goes, hold up, Burke. I'm doing something. And what he was doing was teaching my son how to play the guitar.
Oh, that's great.
So how do you get that out of your head?
That's a great story, man. Yeah, that needs to go in your book.
Yeah. Well, now everybody knows it, so.
Yeah. But, I mean, yeah, I mean, I think you know, with the advent of Nirvana and grunge and all that stuff, it kind of put Skid Row on the slide, so to speak. But Subhuman Race was another amazing, heavy, heavy record. I think it's very underrated.
You know, a lot of people – talk about rock and roll in the different categories and the different genres and stuff, but I always think it's just kind of like not worth talking about because we're just human beings on this fucking earth, right? Like, oh, this band, like, my God, we're all gonna die. I don't give a about any other bands. Like, yeah. It doesn't...
I'm saying is Subhuman Race, it's a great record that kind of got overlooked a little bit because of the style of the fashion of music.
I guess what I'm trying to state here, you, as I do, you play Europe all the time. Mm-hmm. And I'm playing there this summer all over Europe, like 30 shows.
Great, yeah.
With all kinds of bands. And I don't get... America subcategories and you can't play with I've been told by promoters that I can't play with the Black Veil Brides. It's not right. And I go, who the fuck are you? I play with that band in Europe, playing with them at Grass Pop in 2 months. Why can't I play with the, like, who makes these rules?
Yeah, what's the
no, the fans don't give a fuck. Like, in
if you put on a good show, the fans will love it.
In Europe, you can go see a Bill, Journey, Black Sabbath, The Police, and Hatebreed.
Yeah. You're right, though.
And nobody cares. I mean, everybody's out for the day, having fun. Yeah. How great would that be here? How great would that be?
We're doing Download this year, and our day, it's the headliner is Linkin Park, and then it's like Fall Out Boy, Status Quo, Twisted Sister, Dying Fetus, Fozzy, and, like, you know, like you said, Black Veil Brides. It's very eclectic over there because there's not any rules.
But it works.
It does. It does
works.
Work. Because all that matters at the end of the day is that you put on a good show and people enjoy it.
But I don't understand why that doesn't happen in the States. If it did, it would be so healthy for rock.
Yeah, I agree.
Because I always go on my website posting dates, and they're like in Norway, and everybody's like, when are you coming to Houston? I go, I don't know what to tell you.
Yeah,
I'm going to Ecuador. I would love to come to Houston. I don't know what to tell you.
It's harder in the
I don't
States
know why
too.
That is.
Yeah, I mean.
But it's nothing to do with the fans. That's the weird part.
Well, especially as your biggest territory as far as people knowing who you are, as far as being a recognizable, you know, person, is the States.
I can't walk down the street. I'm sure you have the same thing. So I think it's a case of, like, you know, Live Nation always putting the same bands out on the road. Like, when I drive past on the highway in Iowa and I look at who's playing The Shed, it's always REO Speedwagon, Night Ranger, Foghat. Who are they?
And what happens
when
those
bands... Why
can't
I put out a record? Here's my new record. Give them out. I'm playing in The Shed.
Yeah.
Why is that so crazy?
Yeah.
You know, Europe, it's easy.
You know. But it's funny because, you know, you can't play with Black Veil Brides here, but yet, you know, if Kiss and Motley Crue goes on tour, or Kiss and Def Leppard goes on tour, you don't do those shows.
So who are you supposed to play with? I could do them.
Okay.
There's no money in a lot of. Yeah. It's not enough to support the bus.
$1,000 a night, buddy.
And the bus.
Yeah, the bus alone. You're right.
Filling up the bus is $1,500 at the gas every time.
Yeah.
People don't get this. Yeah. People don't understand this.
You're right, man.
Sorry, Houston. I'll see you in Ecuador.
Dude, what was it like when you left Skid Row, or like you said, you booted or whatever it was? Was it hard? Like, did you next day kind of go like, what do I do now?
Yes, it was scary. Mm-hmm. It was frightening.
Yeah.
Because I would join that band when I was a kid.
Yeah, it was your whole life up to that point.
Not to mention it was a brand that I gave the best years of my life into making, like Coca-Cola or something. It's a huge brand that's not huge anymore, but at the time it was a big deal. So I just called try to do this. Let's see if we can play some solo shows. And they booked me 2 weeks, and it was very well received.
Red Deer, Alberta.
Yeah, it was fun.
I remember I jumped on stage.
Two nights.
Yeah, I jumped on stage, and afterwards is when we kind of connected online or something like that. But, dude, that was years and years and years ago, man. I remember he still had the guitar player that had the wings.
Jimmy Flemion.
Yeah, he wore wings on stage.
I remember that gig specifically. I shorted out all the power in that hotel by plugging in my hair dryer. like right before that show, like about 5 or 6, I go, time to get ready. I go, I'm on stage like in a little bit. And I had to call down. They had to fix the whole thing. And Red Deer.
Yeah.
Dead rear.
Yeah, dead rear. And another, it's funny, you had a full-length silver sequin suit on. Silver. And I tried everywhere to try and find one like that.
No, that's custom.
I wanted to wear that.
That's custom.
I was like, damn, I got to find myself.
All of that was my reaction against grunge. I've always been a rebel. And I always think it's funny to say you, like, I think it's hilarious. So right at the height of grunge, I go, I'm gonna go more glam than I have ever been,
yeah,
and everybody can kiss my fucking ass. I think that's hilarious.
It was great, man. It was
we wore that opening for Pantera.
Did you?
Yeah. And Anthrax. It was Pantera, Anthrax, Sebastian Bach. He came out in the wings. You couldn't believe Anthrax in the hallway watching us go to the stage. They were laughing. You go, they're like, Scott, he's like, man, you guys don't give a f- at all. I go, no, we don't. Imagine wearing that. And I don't care.
Oh, I bet you that the Pantera boys loved it. At least I bet you Diamond Vinny did. They're glam guys.
Yes.
Look, they used to dress that way too.
It was kind of making fun of glam.
Yeah.
Because it, it's just another way to say
stand out in the crowd. So you're going on tour in a couple months, like you said, to Europe. Who are you going? Have you put together the live band already?
Yeah, I'm actually playing New York City, New Jersey, Baltimore, Maryland, Portland, Maine.
Yeah, so you got some states.
I always play like the same areas.
Northeast is big for metal, though.
Never ever play Texas. Mm-hmm. Never play Florida. Never play down there. I used to all the time.
Have you done a coast-to-coast U.S. tour
in a while? A long time ago.
But, I mean, recently over the last couple of records?
Not U.S.
That's insane.
Not U.S.
I mean, I'm sure you could countries. Do one. Yeah. I'm sure you should put it together.
Yeah, it's all promoters.
Yeah, I gotcha. Who's in your band? Who's going to be in your band?
Will Hunt on drums.
Will's in every band.
Well, that's what you were saying before. It's hard to keep five guys together. Mm. My drummer on Give 'Em Hell is Bobby Jar Zombeck, who I love.
He's great. He's played with you for a long time.
But he is also in Fate's Warning.
Oh, is he?
So
it's kind of, two different
styles. I have to share him. But on the record, he's incredible.
So who's playing guitar with you on the road?
Devin Bronson, who Duff introduced me to.
Okay.
Total professional.
Mm-hmm.
He's a, like,
gets to the lobby in time.
Yeah, that is, what a concept.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
Might actually be able to do the show.
This kid's got a future. Yeah. So when you do your shows now, is it mostly solo stuff, half and half with Skid Row? I mean, there's certain songs you have to play.
That depends on how long the set is.
Mm-hmm.
If somebody says to me 40 minutes,
right,
that's 6 songs.
Yeah,
am I going
to
do?
Right, you have to.
Yeah, I don't want to. If you're going on stage in front of 50,000 people, like in France at Hellfest, it's a huge gig. It's gigantic. Mm-hmm. So you want to connect.
Yeah, that's the most important thing, right? You have to connect.
I mean, I read Willie Nelson books, and they ask him, how many new songs are going to make the set? this tour. He's like, very few, if any. Mm-hmm. He goes, I try that all the time. He goes, the fact is, people want to hear On the Road Again, and putting a song next to that, yeah, it's got to be really good, you know? I love my but, you know, when I've sold 20 million records with mm-hmm. Skid Row, that's a lot. Those are iconic songs.
Of course. You know, especially like we said, three from the first record alone. Mm-hmm. That's the AC/DC style of doing things. They'll play two or three new songs because they probably enjoy it.
Yes.
But then the other side of the coin is Iron Maiden, who they'll do the new record in its entirety, and people will be sitting there going, what the hell are we listening to?
Well, you know? This also goes back to my thing I was saying, that I know when it works and when it doesn't. Yeah. There's certain songs that do fucking work, mm-hmm. like American Metalhead.
Great tune.
That gets the mm-hmm. crowd in the palm of my hand just as much as Skid Row songs. Another one is Stuck Inside.
Another good tune, yeah.
When I play that, just how incredible it is. People are like, nobody's sad. Everybody's fucking rocking.
After all these years, what are your favorite songs to sing still?
Well, the new songs, obviously. Yeah, yeah. That's my favorite songs to sing. Because it is, you know, like a song like Piece of Me. I've mm-hmm. sung so many times that it's wore off on me mm-hmm, a little mm-hmm. bit. But I know people want to hear it.
Right. But yeah. What still gets the crowd the most? Youth Gone Wild?
That always gets them.
Yeah.
But, you know, I can... different crowds are different.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Different countries.
Yeah. Yep. Like the ending of Dirty Power is huge. I know you're going, what is that? I make my sets like... you know, sequenced, mm-hmm. for lack of a better word. Like, you know, some bands go out there with no set list.
Yeah.
I don't really like to do that. I like,
oh, really? You just call it on the fly?
No, I said I don't like to do that.
You don't like to do that.
I like to have it, you know
what you
come
got.
Out crazy, you know. Yeah. I wouldn't want to open with a ballad, you know.
Yeah.
So, the ending of Dirty Power, like for a metal crowd, people really dig that. You know, everybody loves the beginning of 18 Life mm-hmm. when that starts.
Mm-hmm.
I Remember You's huge.
Right.
Monkey Business.
Classic tune.
Gigantic.
Too.
That song is one of the
I think that still gets me rocking.
When we get that at the last of the set, they're right into it.
You got so much stuff going on. The new record, Give Him Hell. You're going to do a book. You might go back to Broadway.
Mm-hmm.
We talked earlier about The Police. We talked about, you know, Van Halen. Will there, would there, could there ever be a Skid Row reunion? Or do you even want that at this point in time with all the stuff you have going
on? That's not for me to answer. It's for those
guys. So you're open to it if it came up.
It's simple. Yeah. It's so easy.
Yeah.
It's the
fans need it, man. Blah, blah, blah. Like, exactly. Right.
I don't understand the aversion to cash. I don't understand. I don't get it. Why isn't there the Skid Row box set with unreleased tracks and a booklet with mm-hmm. unreleased photos and the DVDs, Osaken? Why?
Mm-hmm.
Every other fucking band in the world has that. Like, mm-hmm. I don't get it. Do you know that it's impossible to buy the Skid Row videos on DVD?
Like Roadkill and those?
No, I mean 18 in Life.
Oh, wow.
I Remember You. Hmm. Those videos mm-hmm. do not exist other than on VHS.
Or YouTube.
VHS. Yeah. How can that be? What is wrong with cash? Someone needs to explain this to me.
Yeah.
I don't have to like you. Let's go make some fucking bread.
Yeah. And
we don't have to play Kumbaya. We don't have to sit around the campfire. Get the up on the fucking stage, rock, and then roll over.
Way. Yeah, it's right. Rock and roll over. Baz, it's always great to talk to you, man. The new record, right. Give Him Hell.
Yeah!
That's a great title. That sums you up, man.
It is great. I can't believe nobody called their album that.
Did you Google it when you thought
I just said it, and Bob started laughing.
Every time I think of a song title, I always Google it to see if anyone else has used it or not, you know?
Well, I collect comic books, as you know.
Yeah.
And that's a phrase, like an old war comic.
Yeah, like Sergeant Rock.
Enemy Ace. Yeah. Give Him Hell. Yeah. And I'm like, give him hell!
Dude, it's great to talk to you, man.
Thank you, buddy.
Thank you for coming in.
Okay.
And we'll check out the record. We'll be back with more Talk is Jericho after this.
The longest field goal ever attempted is 76 yards. The longest field goal ever missed? Also 76 yards. Why bring this up?
Because knowing your limits matters, both when you're kicking a field goal and when you gamble. Betting more than you're comfortable with is like trying a 70-yard field goal. It probably won't go well. So set a limit when you gamble and stick to it. Want more helpful tips like this? Go to KeepItFunOhio.com for games, quizzes, and lots of ways to keep your gambling from getting out of hand.
Talk is Jericho.
All right, I posted the phone number on the Twitter and asked all of you, at Talk is Jericho, at Fozzy Rock, what do you think of the new Fozzy single, Lights Go Out? Let's find out who's paying attention, who's heard the tune. Let's go to Julian in California and see what he has to think about. Julian, how's it going, man?
Hey, Chris, how you doing?
Good. Where are you calling from?
Calling from Chico, California.
Chico, baby. Okay, cool. Well, we're talking about the new Fozzy tune, Lights Go Out. What are your thoughts?
I thought it was really good. I actually, because it's not available on iTunes in the U.S. yet, so I was on YouTube, and I was, that's pretty funny because over the weekend I was listening to it, and my girlfriend was home, and I'm pretty sure she's like sick of that song by now. You know?
It's a catchy tune. It definitely gets in your head, which is cool. Yeah, you mentioned before the song was out on iTunes that you could hear it on YouTube on the lyric video. That
I like that lyric video. It was pretty cool.
It's kind of the new thing now. Like sometimes you'll do a video for the song, and other times it's just the lyric video, which is having all the lyrics up kind of in a really cool way. And it's actually done really well, so you can check that on YouTube if you haven't seen it. Have you heard any Fozzy tunes before?
Yeah. I looked up some of your. I bought All That Remains. I remember when it first came out because I think Enemy was a pay-per-view single.
That's right. Yeah,
that was really good.
Well,
really
cool, man.
Yeah.
It's been a while since that came out. It was out in 2005, and then we had Chasing the Grail in 10 and Sin and Bones in 12, and the new record comes out in July with the first song being Lights Go Out. So I'm glad you liked it, Julian. I appreciate you calling in. Let's go over to Gail in West Palm Beach, Florida. Hello, Gail. How are you?
I'm good. How are you doing?
Good, good. So we're talking about the new Fozzy song, Lights Go Out. And have you heard the song?
Yeah. Saw you guys play it this weekend live.
Oh.
Even better.
Awesome. So you were at Jacksonville?
Jacksonville and Tampa.
Oh, cool. Okay. So what do you think of the new tune?
It's awesome. And I was at the CD listening party. The whole CD is awesome.
Ooh, you're one of the few that got to hear it before anybody else. So tell us your thoughts about the CD, because everybody got to hear it once and, of course, not recorded or anything like that. So what are your thoughts about it?
Well, lots of catchy songs. I won't give away the cover surprise.
Uh-huh.
I don't know if you want that out there.
That's a surprise, too. That's right, yeah.
Yeah. But, no, I loved it. I mean, I have all your CDs, so I love all the CDs, and it's just as good, and they sounded awesome live.
Well, good. I'm glad that you checked it out, and I'm glad we got to see you this weekend. You'd had a whole Fozzy, Fozzy long weekend, Thursday, Friday, and Saturday.
It was Fozzy weekend.
Did you watch any other bands at Rockfest or at Rockville?
I did. We as Human, I think, mm-hmm. played before you guys, and then... you know, I can't even remember the other names. What was it?
But Fozzy was all that mattered.
I was there. Exactly. I was only there to see you guys, and then that was it. But I saw a few of the others, and they were good. Not as good, of course.
Good. Well, I'm glad you liked the new tune, and I'm glad you liked the new record. And the song is on iTunes now, and the record comes out in July. So
awesome.
Cool. We'll talk to you soon. Thank you so much, Gail. And we'll head over now to Michigan. With Richard. What's going on, man?
What's going on, Chris? How you doing, man?
Good. Where are you calling from in Michigan?
Bay City, Michigan. It's about 2 hours north of Detroit.
All right, cool. Great city.
Hey,
great state.
I listened to the song, Chris, man. I got to tell you, it sounds a lot. I mean, it sounds like you guys are heavily influenced by that older Ozzy stuff. Like, if you took someone off the street, you know, and listened to the Fozzy song, it wouldn't be out too far out in left field for them to say it sounds a lot like kind of the older Ozzy stuff from, like, I think his newest record is Black Rain.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if you want to take that as a compliment.
No, of course, absolutely. Black Rain was back in about 2007. It's interesting because, you know, I've heard people say that, you know, especially my vocal has an Ozzy quality, and I've heard it before, and we actually even covered Fairies Wear Boots on the last record just so I could actually try and sing like Ozzy and see how it was. It's actually pretty funny. If you haven't heard it, it sounds exactly like Ozzy. I guess it's just kind of a style to my voice that reminds people of that. And it's a huge compliment because Ozzy is one of my favorite singers of all time. It's interesting to me, though. Lights Go Out, I don't really hear the Ozzy as much. But I've heard that comparison because people have said, sounds like Ozzy, sounds like Sabbath. But then I also hear people say it sounds like Nine Inch Nails, it sounds like Rob Zombie, it sounds like Good Charlotte, it sounds like Muse, it sounds like this, that. I guess it's kind of reminding people of a lot of different things, which is cool. I mean, people are kind of connecting to it in a lot of different ways.
Well, there's, you know, all the bands that you mentioned are great bands, so, I mean, I would take that as a compliment for
sure. Of course.
Sure.
And, you know, the most important thing, as long as people are remembering it, and that's it's kind of that's what we've been getting with this. So I'm glad that you checked it out, Richard.
And absolutely, man. No problem.
Appreciate it, man. We'll talk to you. Let's head on over to Joe from South Jersey. What's going on, Joe?
Hey, what's going on, Chris? How you doing?
Doing good, man. Where are you at?
I'm in South Jersey, right across from Philadelphia, in Deptford.
Oh, killer, killer. Okay, cool. So we're talking about Lights Go Out, the new Fozzy tune. Thoughts?
Real funny story. I had the Shatner pod on. I work overnight at an oil refinery.
Yeah.
I was listening to the pod, and it was probably like 1, 2 a.m., and I got to admit to you, I've been beat to hell, and I started to fall out a little bit. And when the tune kicked on, man, it woke me up. It was a killer tune. I'm new to Fozzy. I watched you wrestle for years, but I'm new to Fozzy, and this is actually the first song I heard from you guys.
That's the first Fozzy tune you've ever heard.
Yeah, and I agree with the last caller. I did definitely hear a little bit of an Oz vibe in there, but I was digging it, man.
Cool, man.
We're going to go back on Rhapsody and check out some more Fozzy.
Well, that's great, man. We'll appreciate I'm glad that you were checking it out, and thanks for listening to the Shatner Show, and thanks for listening to this show. And thanks for, I think a lot of people are getting that vibe from this. They haven't heard Fozzy before, don't really know a lot about us other than the fact that, you know, Jericho's the singer or Rich Ward's the guitar player. But this is opening a lot of doors for people to hear us for the first time, and I hope you like it. So far, we're 4 for 4. Not a bad ratio. Let's get one more call here. Let's go to Jessica in Virginia. Hello, Jessica.
Hey, Chris. How are you?
I'm doing good. So we're talking about Lights Go Out. Have you heard the song?
Oh, yes. I love it. It's very addicting.
Oh, cool.
I haven't been able to stop listening to it.
Where did you hear it first?
YouTube.
On YouTube with the lyric video?
Yes.
Excellent. So you'd like the song, and are you a big Fozzy fan?
Yes.
Okay, so you've heard a lot of the material before. Did you find it a little bit different from before, or was it kind of the same vibe as we've always done, or what did you think?
A little different, but I like it.
Cool, cool. Did you like it the first time you heard it, or did it take you a little to get used to?
A little bit getting used to it. It's a lot different from the previous Fozzy songs.
Cool. Well, I'm glad that you like it. And
I can't wait to hear it live at Carolina Rebellion.
Oh, so you're going to be at Carolina Rebellion. All right. You will hear it at Carolina Rebellion this Sunday for sure. And I appreciate everybody who called. I appreciate everybody who has heard the tune. And, you know, I've played it pretty much, I think, every show since it came out. But that's okay. It's my show, and I can play it if I want to. It's my show, and I can play if I want to. Play if I want to. Play if I want. There you go. Don't ever hold. See, here's the difference. Hold the cowbell by the handle. Hold the cowbell by the cowbell. A couple weeks ago, I'm not going to tell you what show it was. I didn't have a cowbell, and I used a frying pan and a knife. The things I do to keep this show rolling. Show keeps it rolling all night long. 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 All right, thank you for checking out the show. Thank you for listening to Lights Go Out, and thank you for using my Amazon link every time you do your online shopping. It's really easy to find. Just go to podcast1.com, click on the Keep Our Podcasts Free banner at the top of the page, and then click on Talk is Jericho. You'll see all three of my Amazon links from the UK, the US, Canada. Woo! That's a lot of links, man. Linky, baby. Every time you do that, Amazon kicks back a little cash to the show so we can keep doing this for you for free for twice a week. No extra fees, no hidden charges. You're just getting your shopping done and helping me out in the process. I bought a couple books this week from the Amazon link on Talk is Jericho, and you can do it too. So thank you. I've got Cesaro from the WWE coming up on Friday. It's a great show. Thank you to Sebastian Bach for joining us today, and thanks to all of you. We'll see you on Friday. Stay hard. Stay hungry. Peace, love, and hugs, and a big yeah, boy.
You can download new episodes of Talk is Jericho every Wednesday and Friday at podcastone.com. That's podcastone.com.